Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 48, Will Churnland. Man, that's a tough name to say. Okay, get ready. I call this the triple threat. These next three episodes, so this is 48, 49, and number 50, are all sellers that have been involved in a business that are selling over $5 million a year. Maybe one of the three are going to hit $10 million this year. We're talking mega sellers. But let me tell you, it's not quite what you think. The guy you're going to hear tonight is one of the coolest guys you'll ever meet. He's helped bring 2,000 products to market. I had to pause. You're going to hear me pause in podcast. I'm like, wait, say that number again. It was 2,000 products. Now, they're all not been all successful, and that's part of the fun, I guess, you know. However, he's 25 years old. He just turned 25 the day before the podcast, and he's already worked on 2,000 products and brought them to market. He could do it with his eyes closed. And I think that that's going to be the thing that you're going to get from these next three sellers. It is worth taking notes. It is humbling to hear how they do it. They're so open, so candid, and so giving. And I'm blown away. So get ready to jump into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest is he was turned on to me by Sam Cohen. And he said, Steve, you've got to talk to this guy. This guy's amazing. He is figured it out. He's just growing like gangbusters. And, you know, a little pre-interview I get to do before we go live, I was able to find out that he's carrying about 15 private label products, has his own e-commerce sites in addition to selling on Amazon. Welcome, Will Churnland.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I got it right? The last name?
Yep. Perfect.
It is clearly Nordic in nature, right?
Yes. It's very easy to tell when telemarketers are calling.
Churnland.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So it is a T-J-E-R-N. So it is tough. So give me credit, people, when you're listening to this. Will, you look like a young guy. How could you be such a mega e-commerce seller at such a young age? Why have you figured it out at such a young age?
I think one of the main things that gave me a big competitive advantage over everyone else is that I had such a good role model. My older brother, who is 6 years older than me, he started selling on Amazon in like 2000, not on Amazon, excuse me, on eBay in 2002, 2003, and he was ordering products in 2002, 2003 from Alibaba and private labeling them and selling them on eBay at the time, making pretty decent money. And so I was 12, 13 at the time, and at a very young age, I understood that it was very possible to buy products at one price in one country and sell them in a different country at a higher price. And I kind of since then have always been on the lookout kind of for like private label product ideas and ideas that I could of products I could buy from China and sell in the U.S. And so I've had at least 10 years now of kind of keeping my eye out and looking for the next new product.
Did you work with him in his business?
So, yeah, I sold by myself throughout high school and college, just kind of here and there, never like a systemized business that was very repetitive. But when I graduated college, my brother and I joined forces full-time for the first time, and it really took the business to the next level and did somewhere around, I think, like $1.2 or $1.3 million in sales in 2013 and got it up to $6 million sales in 2014.
It's just incredible. For him to bring you in, or even I guess you just picked it up through osmosis, just seeing it, and I'm sure that was the topic of dinner conversation. Were your parents are your parents entrepreneurs?
Not exactly. My dad works at a family-owned manufacturing company that my great-grandpa started, but they do mostly B2B stuff, and that's like a 77-year-old company. So it's entrepreneurial on one end where it's like your own boss, but it's not as entrepreneurial where kind of like you jump off the diving board and try something new by yourself point of view.
So, but it is a CEO type of thing, right?
Yes.
So the leadership was shown and talked about, probably, especially if your brother's that much older than you. I'm sure that had to be some interesting conversation at 12 years old around the dinner table. Did your brother work in your father's business at one point?
Yeah, we both worked at it kind of on and off as like kids, working on the assembly line and that kind of stuff. So we've had like weird little jobs there here and there when they need us and stuff like that. But I think we've all understood that it's very hard to get ahead in life when you're not the owner. You are just an employee, that's a lot tougher.
You're blowing me away with this, because now I'm thinking about, I'm picturing you on the assembly line as a younger person, and you're seeing all those different roles. I don't think most people have ever seen what a manufacturing operation looks like. So you do have a real distinct advantage to be able to see, you know, and I'm sure they had a distribution wing, right? So they manufactured the product, they distribute it, and they had accounting, and they had all those services, right?
Yep. Yeah, their main people they sell to is like companies like Grainger, if you've heard of them. They sell mostly like very specific heating and ventilation products.
But being exposed to that and all the different pieces, so does that now transfer as you go into Amazon? I mean, you're not packing, you're not doing that big volume packing in boxes yourself, right?
No, yeah, 100%. It's the thing is just looking at things for what they are, and so I see a set of four drink coasters at Target that are concrete drink coasters going for $20 for the set of four. As coming from a kind of my manufacturing lens, I can look at those and go, okay, what would it actually cost to make those? Would a pour concrete almost cost nothing? So I can imagine those four drink coasters can be bought on Alibaba for about $1 and sold for $20 on Amazon, because it's like I can put on my manufacturing lens and see how much work really goes into creating that. Oh, it can be done in one swift motion. That's probably a cheap product then.
But how do you know that it's going to sell? It's just the fact that it's at Target and they've done the research? Is that the logic?
No. I never know anything's going to sell. I've sourced and sold over 2,000 different products.
Wow.
And
Wait. 2,000? How old are you?
24. Oh, actually 25 as of yesterday.
Wait. So we're going to pause here for a second. I gotta collect my thoughts. You're 25 years old and you've sourced and sold, or attempted to sell, I guess, because some of them didn't work, 2,000 different products.
Yes. When I explain it, it's not as crazy as it sounds.
Well, I mean, it's probably one SKU, and there's, you know, 28 variations of a SKU, right? Colors, sizes, all that kind of jazz.
Kind of like that. It's more like a supplier might have 150 SKUs, and I'll order 10 different SKUs to start off. Five of those will sell really well, and then I'll reorder the five that sell well, and then I'll try ordering 10 new SKUs that I didn't order last time until I've maximized out their whole entire catalog.
And
so it's like it's much easier. Like we had my brother at one time and I had 1,700 different products in stock at Amazon, and it's a lot easier to have 1,700 products and have like say like a dozen suppliers than to have 1,700 products and 1,700 suppliers.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And so you're buying most of those 1,700 overseas?
Well, yes. It all depends, because it's my brother and I had half our business was wholesale, and like us contacting brands we knew, and then also it was half private label. And so what we would do is say there's a product I'm trying to think of an example. Say there's a dog leash we like to sell, and we start selling a camouflage dog leash that we private labeled from Amazon. So we'll start selling that, and it'll start selling well. And then we'll start selling a fluorescent dog leash, and that will start selling well. So we're kind of going these like little like niche within a niche. And then eventually we'll go and see who the top dog leash manufacturers are, contact them and say, hey, my name is Will Churland. I'm the Amazon expert. No one knows more about selling on Amazon than I do. We sell hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in dog leashes, and all my customers keep asking about your dog leashes, and we want to give our customers the best experience possible, and that's by providing your product straight to the customers. And so we'd give them that pitch, and then on top of that, we give another pitch saying, and then this is what we need you to do. We need you to make us the only authorized distributor of this dog leash, because as soon as you let someone else sell this on Amazon, we're going to have to reduce our price by a penny, they'll reduce their price by a penny, and it will be this perpetual machine and a race to the bottom. And so as long as you can promise that we're the only authorized reseller on Amazon and you can enforce that, we can keep your price high on Amazon and make sure that we don't destroy any of your wholesale accounts and all the different mom-and-pop pet stores that you sell in. And that's the big selling point, is that all these manufacturers throughout the U.S. are scared to sell on Amazon because they're scared that they're going to diminish their minimum advertised pricing. And if you can calm their nerves about that issue, then they'll sell to you no matter what.
Well, a couple things I want to talk about there, right? So you're saying to the manufacturer, you're responsible to enforce through Amazon your products, right? You're saying to them, you're not going to do it. You're going to control to make sure that it maintains their map. But you're saying, Mr. Manufacturer, you have to let Amazon know that we're the only exclusive seller, right?
Kind of, yeah. We'd have them register the brand, and then we would just kind of sit there and monitor it from time to time, seeing if there's anyone else jumping in on our listing. And if there is, then we copy and paste the seller's name, figure out what company they're from, and then pass it on to the manufacturer saying, hey, this person's selling on the Amazon listing and diminishing your brand. You better do something about it. And usually we can get it in writing and in a contract ahead of time saying that we're going to be the only official distributor. And so they're really then have to make sure that they enforce that we're the only authorized distributor, because they don't want to deal with a lawsuit.
How did you manage that? You know, I mean, if with the number of products that you're speaking about, how did you manage it? Did you have VAs helping you in some way, or did you use software?
We tried different software throughout the time. The easiest way, honestly, for us to manage it was just through replenishment alerts through Amazon's internal backend.
Talk us through that. Yeah.
Every single item that we had, we would send into Amazon. And so our entire inventory was always at Amazon. So that was the only place we had to keep track of inventory. And then from there, we would just kind of use historical sales data. So say we sell a unit a day, and it takes us 60 days from us ordering it to getting it in stock at Amazon. Well, then the replenished quantity would be at around 60 units, because once we hit down to 60 units, we know that we need to order at that moment or else we're going to run out of stock. And so I'd add, say, 10-15% as like a buffer, and say it's like 75 units. And then you would just get an email every morning from Amazon saying, these are the newest products that have hit the replenishment alert. And if we could group together enough of the same brand name products or the same from the same supplier of our private label products where we could place an actual order, like a container, then we'd place an order. And so there'd be times where we'd be out of stock with a product and it'd be like, yeah, that sucks and all, and we'd like to buy it and restock it, but that manufacturer has a minimum order quantity of $500,000. So we need to wait till their other products run out of stock more before we can place a large stocking order.
But how did you know, I get that. And that's I was going to go there, but I'm trying to understand, how did you know that somebody was on your listing without, because you had so many SKUs, how did you know that somebody was on there? Was there a method that you used to monitor?
Not any method specifically. Something we realized is that when someone would jump on our listing, they usually wouldn't jump on just one of our listings. They'd jump on a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. So that made it a little bit easier. And then two, we could kind of see when it's like, oh, I usually reorder this product by now. Like, why haven't I reordered it? And I look and then someone would be on the listing. Or it's just being kind of paranoid, always looking at your listings, always looking at everything. It was like someone couldn't sit on one of our listings selling one of our items for more than a few days before we'd catch them. That we were pretty good.
I wonder if somebody offers a software. That's what I was looking for. I wonder if somebody offers a service or software where they monitor your product list to make sure that there's only one seller. I don't know of one. I've not heard of one.
It'd be a very quick variation of just repricing software, because you just have it set where the second it has to be repriced, send me an alert.
Okay, Mr. Repricer group out there. There's a opportunity. Sounds like it's a need for those things for private label sellers, which is growing. Well, I mean, let's face it. Private label's growing.
One more thing that I need a repricer for, and maybe that's out there, is a repricer for private label products where you don't know what to set the value at. So say I'm selling those four drink
coasters.
Yeah, coasters. imagine you're selling them at $17.99, you sell 10 units, you sell them at $24.99, you sell 8 units, you go, okay, they're somewhere in that sweet spot of the exact price where I can sell the most units possible and make the most profit possible. And you want to test all these different prices, but there's no one competing in the buy box. You just want your price to change every 15 seconds to keep track of the sales data. And you have it run like that for, say, a month until you find the optimal price you should actually price your product at, which might be $23.76 or something.
Yeah, I'm not aware of anybody doing that. I know there are some that use pretty strong algorithms, but and that's really what it's going to involve, right? Somebody calculating and just continue it. So, you know, again, there's another opportunity out there. Private label sellers, I think it's a great example. And, you know, I think that's a really good idea is that nobody – that's new. You know, I guess white label's been around for a long time, but not at the level it is today. And all the other stuff has been built for retail arb or – you know, online arb. This is a growing market, and somebody should jump into that niche. Chris Green, you hear us? Get out there. Let's see something. Okay, so you've really grown up in a very strong business sense with this whole, you know, starting back with your parents and that kind of thing, and then growing up with your brother and then working together and working in all those businesses. Now you're kind of springing out on your own. Let's talk about that. Why? Well, you know, I'm going to take us to break. When we come back, I want to talk about why you broke out on your own and what do you see your future looking like? Is it going the exact same path or do you feel like you're going to veer off in a different way? Let's go to break. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. Okay, by now you figured out this dude knows what he's talking about. He's 25 by a day. It makes you think, you know, imagine knowing what he knows at that age if you were that person now. You know, offline we talked about his travel. You know, he's going south for a couple months. I mean, I'm not talking south of the border. And here we are, trudging, getting ready for winter. You know, I think this is a sign of the times. This younger generation is saying, you know what, I'm not going to be bound by any 9-to-5. I'm not going to be bound by any county borders, state borders, country borders. Wouldn't that be so cool to have that figured out? Imagine taking your kids on a life lesson in another country because your business allows that. I mean, it's just mind-blowing to think about. And if you have kids, this is the kind of stuff you need to be teaching them. These are the kind of episodes you really want to let them listen to and let them understand. You can work 9-to-5. Hey, lots of people do it. Or you can do something like this. But don't get me wrong. This is hard work. This is not easy. We all know it's not easy. But it can be done. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Will Churdland. Got it again. Yes. It's a tough one, man. I tell you, just looking at it just makes you want to say, you know, to TJ. And an amazing, successful seller. Grew up in, you know, not an entrepreneurial family, but a management family, leadership owners. Like you said, you know, you knew you had to work for yourself. You couldn't be work for anyone else if you were really going to make it. And maybe that's the answer. Started working with your brother. You guys did it together. But now you're veering out on your own. Talk about why.
Well, I looked at beginning of the year, looked at my brother's and I business and saw that it's only going to become bigger and we're only going to have to hire more factory workers and more secretaries and virtual assistants, and it's just going to become more and more a bigger monster for us to deal with. And kind of thinking of like, yeah, what's the best case scenario in 2-3 years, and it's like I'm probably going to be still doing this, and a kind of dream I had was I would look at our, say, 1,700 different products we sold, and I'd go, wow, if we only sold the top 10 products of our 1,700, we would make each $200,000 a year, say, in profit. And we would have to work almost never, because it would be 10 products, it would be so easy to manage, it would be the easiest job in the world, and we'd make a ton of money. And I thought, well, wow, why don't I do that for myself? And my brother has just had a second kid, just bought a house, he's married, he's got his whole family to take care of, and so it makes sense that he kind of works the 40-hour-a-week job and kind of has something a little bit more stable. I'm more of a wild child, I don't have any dependents or anything like that, and so I spend my time traveling around and kind of doing whatever I want, because my whole entire Amazon business that I've started since May is location independent, and so I don't touch the inventory, I don't see the inventory. And the whole entire business can be run from my laptop.
So your why is you want the freedom, you want complete freedom in essence, really. You want nothing tying you to anywhere other than an internet connection, and you can get one of those at any Panera, any hotspot in the world, right?
Yep.
Are you starting with brand new products, or did you split up products? Let me ask it that way.
Yeah, I started with brand new. I started with a brand new account and started with brand new products. I gave him the whole entire business. So I'm starting from absolute scratch.
And that's kind of cool, right? Kind of proving yourself again?
Yeah, to some point. It's I guess it's like I've been doing it long enough now where it's like if anyone doesn't believe me or can believe that I can do it or something, then it's like, well, they got their own problems then, because it's like it's one of those things where if I couldn't start my own business on my own, then it would have been earth-shattering, honestly, because it would have been like, well, how did I do this so well my whole entire life? And then when I really need to do it well, I can't do it. That'd be – it'd be like someone choking in the World Series or something like that.
Right. So you know where you're going. Do you?
No.
Okay.
I don't think Amazon's going to be around in this capacity for more than another like 7 to 10 years. And so eventually I'm going to have to come out with something new or do something new. I've been kind of learning how to like code on the side to have some other skills. I've been trying to build out my private label brand as more than just a private label brand, so I can actually have some sort of like presence off of Amazon too and have
business. Right. So like a retail, say, you know, if you come up with your own name and you bring it into retail or on your own private party site, and you have some e-commerce sites. You said that they're really not designed to help sell. They're really there to give you credibility. Talk about that.
Well, I built a bunch of e-commerce sites with my brothers and I's different niches, and they weren't super successful. I think between like the 6 or 7 e-commerce sites in 2014, they did like $200,000 in sales compared to like $6 million in sales we did on Amazon. And I probably spent just as much time on the e-commerce sites as I did on Amazon. Like building them out, making sure everything's uploaded, making sure everything works right. And I just kind of decided that that's not the best use of my time. For every 10 hours I put into the Amazon business, sourcing new products and actually growing my business, compared to 10 hours of me kind of like messing around with Shopify and kind of like learning the steps slowly but surely, it's just a much better use of my time just to focus on Amazon. And so, like I said, I have the website as kind of something to add legitimacy if someone Googles a brand or tries to look it up. But for the most part, I don't try to send a bunch of traffic there or anything, because that's not my expertise.
And frankly, it's an enormous amount of effort to get it to grow, right? I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing any wholesale now in this new model by yourself?
Yeah, I've just worked out a few deals with a few companies already for me to become like the official distributor of them.
Okay, so you're using that same whole, look, I'm going to come in and I'm going to help you dominate in your market, in your category, your product. We'll protect you. We'll do that same thing. So you're using that same approach.
Yep. It's super easy to sell people on that, because it's like I wholeheartedly believe it, because I see some of these mom-and-pop companies where it's like, man, if I just got you on Amazon and really optimized things the way it should be, you could be making a lot more money. Like, let me help you.
Do you have any examples of companies that, even when you were back with your brother, that you were able to take and, you know, they were selling, you know, $10,000 a month online and now they're selling $100,000 a month? Any examples?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to name any specific brand.
Okay, no, you don't have to name the company.
Yeah, to screw over my brother or anything, but yeah, there's definitely some ones where companies contacted us a few months later and took notice and go, wow, we did not expect you to be placing $100,000 orders a couple months in. This is really taking off. Like, what else can we do to help you make your life easier kind of thing? We had those conversations all the time where, like, they couldn't believe because they just underestimate the power of Amazon. And so when I sell one of their – they have a real brand name that's 50 years old, and I can sell 20 units a day. It's not surprising to us, but it's surprising to them.
And it's – and are there – is there a profile of the typical companies that aren't really selling on Amazon that you're approaching? I mean, are they well-established companies like your father's,
yeah,
right? Are those the style?
That would be – if they sold something more consumer-based, it would make more sense. But, yeah, I would say any company that's under, say, $100 million in revenue a year where you can actually contact them. You can contact someone like Sony or Panasonic or something, obviously. But anyone like say there's a – I watch a lot of UFC, a lot of cage fighting. And so all of the different brands of, like, clothing and, like, UFC gloves and all that kind of stuff is these perfect-sized companies where, like, a normal person wouldn't have any idea who this company is. But if you're in the UFC niche, then you would definitely know who all these brand names are. And they're the perfect-sized company where the one company I did deals with, they said their largest reseller did $500,000 a year in sales, and the majority of the resellers do about $2,000 to $5,000 a year in sales. And so It's like I can call up because they're a bunch of like mom and pop like gyms, and I know then I can call them up and say, hey, I'm really ready to place a $50,000 order this very first time. What's the best pricing you can give me, and what's the best catalog you can give me in selection of products? And that $50,000 order is now makes me in the top 1% of purchasers automatically right off the bat. And so then I have some kind of power right off the bat, and I can kind of push them around and decide where I want to put their brand on Amazon, how I want to use it most efficiently.
Now, are you getting help when you're taking that brand and really putting a lot of effort into it, or is this what you've really become a specialist at?
No, that's kind of the best part, is that it's all just talk. It's the listing's already usually up. I just do click the like have one to sell to on Amazon, and then just send an inventory. And so,
but you're so how are you improving the sales?
Because it's more likely than not is that they're not Prime.
Okay,
so that's huge.
Oh, so they're merchant fulfilling this stuff.
It's someone's merchant fulfilling them at a terrible price usually.
Okay.
And so I'll see like these boxing gloves, and I'll see they're selling them for $150 merchant fulfilled, and it'll have 85 reviews. And you're going, well, what the heck? Well, I'm going to sell this for $120 Prime, and this thing's going to fly off the shelf.
Okay. But you're not giving them any advice on how to improve their listing? I mean, I guess you would if you saw an opportunity.
Yeah, I would. And usually they didn't create the listing themselves.
Oh, they did or they didn't?
Did not.
Oh, so a third party did, so they got crappy photos usually, right?
Exactly. So we can talk them up like that. We can I've also sold a lot to Amazon, and so I can tell them about how I can open them up to that connection where I can get your stuff sold directly to Amazon. Then we're going to be making real money because I have the connections there, even though anyone can do that. And so it's just
okay.
We'll talk
about that because I'm not familiar with that. So tell me. So you've actually sold products to Amazon buyers?
Yeah, to Amazon themselves. Yep.
Yeah, to Amazon, they have buyers out there, right?
Yep.
So talk about that. Tell us how that works.
Basically, there's two ways to go about it. Either they contact you, which they did with us.
Okay, so you're selling boxing gloves, and you have your own brand, and it's it's Will's Boxing Gloves, and they say, hey, we'd like to sell your boxing gloves, Will. We can help you grow your business, right?
Not exactly.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Either you can go to like VendorCentral, like .amazon.com, and sign up to be a vendor. Or what they did with us is they contacted us and said, hey, you guys sell a lot. We would like to buy some of your stuff directly from you. How can we do that? And then you have to fill out like a feed with like all of your different products in the different categories. And so you have a different buyer from Amazon in each category. So you have like an industrial scientific one. You have like a sports and athletic equipment one. You'll have a kitchen accessory one. And then for each one of them, you have to kind of build a relationship, and then – you send them a spreadsheet of all the products you're willing to sell to Amazon, and then you kind of keep that open where you can add more products to that list as you're willing to sell more products to Amazon. Because they, from what their point of view is that even if the listing gets only a few page views, they're willing to buy the product from you because they know they convert very well. And so it doesn't take much for Amazon to start buying inventory from you.
Well, and so let's ask the – uncomfortable question. What quantities do they buy, and do they really beat you down on price?
Well, if they try to beat you down on price, you can just not sell to them, which is fairly easy because you can just keep up your own Amazon fulfilled listing on the same listing. There's nothing against that. And so if they want to try to hardball you, you just don't sell to them. And,
well, did they try to hardball you?
No. Not really.
So that, I've heard that, because, that they do, well, but that's not true.
I'd heard that ahead of time too, and so we just gave them really bad pricing and knew that they don't know the price we buy anything at, and so there's nothing they can do about it. And so we just gave them really bad pricing off the bat, so if we do need to decrease the price over time, it's totally possible. But for the most part is that – then this is the kind of most annoying part of selling to Amazon is that – they place like 2 to 3 purchase orders a week, and you never really know what they're going to want. And so sometimes they go, we want 100 units. And you go, oh, great. This is sweet. We just sold 100 units today because they pay you right there. Or some days they might go, oh, we want 2 units. And it's like, well, that's annoying. They have to package up 2 units just to send to Amazon. And the most annoying part about the whole entire thing is that you have to actually keep the inventory at your warehouse, at least a section of it, because you don't want to have to cancel these purchase orders from Amazon if you don't have it in stock.
So you have to anticipate what they're orders are. But I guess, you know, think about it this way, right? So you have the same conversations with manufacturers, right, when you're buying a product from them, right? So it's really the same thing. You're saying to them, hey, how long does it take for me to get your product so I can, you know, you're working backwards, right? So in Amazon's world, you would just do the same thing. If you knew how many they were going to sell, you were able to do that anticipated, and you know how long it would take for you to get the product, you have to keep that number on hand, right? And I guess it a cushion, right?
Yep.
Some level. And so they paid you instantly? So
well,
if I said
not instantly, but it's within 2 weeks. But the thing is, when you send in like $100,000 worth of inventory, that might not sell for 3 months. So you might not get paid in full for 3 months.
But, oh, so you're giving them terms.
But yeah, but theirs is like, I think they pay within 2 weeks or maybe it's 30 days. But anyways, is that when you send stuff to Amazon, being sold to Amazon, you know it's being sent sold. You know what I'm saying? You know that inventory, even if you had to pay $500,000 in inventory and it's for sell to Amazon, not sell on Amazon, you know you're at least getting that money back immediately because – well, not immediately, but you're getting that money back as soon as Amazon pays you because that's considered sold, opposed to when we'd send in $500,000 in inventory to sell on Amazon, we don't know if that's not going to sell for, say, 3 to 6 months. And so we don't know how fast we're going to get the money back in our pocket. And so that's kind of messed up the cash flow.
Well, but you still have to float Amazon for 2 weeks. I mean, the numbers you're talking about, $1,000, not a big deal. But you're going to float $500,000 worth of inventory, similar to what retailers do get from manufacturers, right, or distributors. Are you able to float from your manufacturer? Would they give you terms usually?
A little bit, but we would try not to get into it because that's one of the benefits we'd have with them is that we'd always try to pay in cash. But floating the $500,000 for 30 days is – and knowing that you're going to get the money in 30 days is so much better than buying $500,000 worth of inventory, which we would do sometimes, and then have it sit in stock for 3 to 4 months and not knowing exactly when it's going to sell and when we're going to get our money back. So even though it's still some sort of kind of like a risk, it's still much better.
And it makes perfect sense. I'm just saying is that, man, that's some serious money to tie up. You got to be a big player. Well, you guys were big players. So the margins clearly are lower, right, because you're selling wholesale to Amazon.
Yes, but they're still – I think our average ticket price was like $140. So they were still like – the margins were like 20%, but it's still a decent amount of money per item.
Okay, so you were selling to them for $140, or the retail price was going to be $140?
Retail price would be $140. We probably sell to them for, like, say, $70 to $80.
Okay, so you were going to let them do a Keystone markup, you know, 50%, right, or 60% in that case, a little bit more than that. And then who paid for shipping?
I'm trying to think.
Imagine maybe it's volume driven sometimes too.
Oh, no, they pay for shipping. Yeah, because that's the dumbest. This is the worst. Another dumb thing that they make you do is that they. I don't even know how I can explain this over audio, but so they want when you say they want 10 items, and you go, okay, I have those 10 items in stock, and they want you to put those in boxes. and tell you how many boxes it's going to be. And so you put them in the boxes, you say how many items are in each box and how much each box weighs. You'll send in that information, and then they'll send you an email back saying, okay, since it's that many boxes, we actually want you to send it via pallet.
So then you got to palletize it.
So there's like a few more steps to sending the inventory into, and so it just adds to all the confusion of selling to Amazon opposed to selling on Amazon.
Did they have you, if they didn't say to send it in by pallet, did they say send one box to this part of the country, this box to another part,
yep.
Or were you able to send it to one distribution center?
Yep, no, they still would do that kind of thing, but what I was getting at was that since they were paying for the shipping, we were always pretty liberal about our packaging, where we were just like, okay, whatever, just fit whatever you can in a box. If they want to go via pallet, whatever, like, don't worry about really trying to, like, really optimize their shipping space, since Amazon always pays for the sell-to shipping to them.
And they negotiate such amazing rates, it really isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
It isn't going to swing for them. So they still would make you ship to other parts of the country, though. Were you shipping generally to their distribution centers, not their final distribution? I forget what they call them, where their regional centers, I guess. I'm going to use that term. I don't know if a better term. Or were you shipping to their endpoint distribution center in some cases?
I honestly don't know. I don't pay attention,
okay.
Really.
When
I first started selling on Amazon, there was like 3 fulfillment centers you could send to. And then in the last few years, it's like every time I send something in, it's to a different fulfillment center. So, it's,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
I'm sending to states that I didn't even know had centers now. And I'm like, how did this come about? You know, and I use inventory placement, so it makes it interesting. It's a fascinating story, and you have a lifetime of experience in 3 years. I mean, it's just incredible to me the growth you guys have had in the last couple of years and the amount of experience that you have. Being so young, I mean, you're right. I mean, you do see an end game. You do see where it's going to go, and you're able to take advantage of it. Now, most people do not have that learning curve handled, probably won't get that learning curve handled, and you're already there. That's really impressive. What do you think is going to be next, all right? So what do you see on the horizon? So you're growing. You got your own private label items. You're going to keep growing them? Or, I mean, do you have an optimal number that you really want to manage? Because like you said, you don't want to put in the 40 hours a week. You want to work when you want to work on what you want to work. So you have somebody processing for you, right? They're receiving. What do you see?
So what I see is that for 2016, we keep building out our private label brands. We get sales up to $1 million a year, so we can start taking a pretty decent salary from it. Once sales get over $1 million a year, I'm going to focus more on maximizing profit opposed to growing revenue like my brother and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I'm also thinking about launching a Kickstarter and kind of designing a product from scratch. I think that the private label kind of fad is becoming more and more saturated, and that creating your own product that only you can sell is kind of like the next frontier. And so I'm probably going to do a few product modifications to some of my private label products and really try to create a brand new product that I can maybe do a Kickstarter or get some sort of PR opportunities through and see if I can actually build a brand and a company that actually adds value to the world instead of just arbitrage.
Hmm. Do you think that's going to be your stamp on the world? Is that what you think? Is that your why?
I have no idea what my stamp is on the world. Like I said, I just turned 25. I still feel like...
You don't have it all figured out? You don't have the rest
still,
60 years figured out?
Yeah,
come on,
exactly.
Man.
I still feel like I'm 16 sometimes. I get carded buying like lighters.
Your picture, you look like you're 16. I mean, there's no question you look like you could pass.
Yeah.
For 16.
Oh yeah, for sure. Not that long ago, I got carded at a movie theater. So it's the kind of thing where I have realized that the world's moving very, very fast in my lifetime. They say like the top 10 jobs right now that are hiring didn't exist 10 years ago. And so I try not to make too grandiose of plans more than like 18 months in the future, because I just don't know what the future holds.
And isn't that kind of the fun thing, that you don't know what the future holds? Isn't that fun? I know a lot of people are afraid of it. You don't sound afraid of it in one bit.
No, I just... It's the way I've seen it all, my life always, is that it just, there's always more, more kind of like gaps in the market for me to take advantage of.
Do you think that's your specialty now? Looking back, right? It sounds like you've seen all gamuts of the business, right, from start to finish, especially seeing all the way through the manufacturing world and then seeing the startup of this, your brother's business and expansion being a big piece of it and now going out and doing it again on your own and proving you can do it again and again and again, right? Do you think that's your biggest strength is your ability to just see those gaps where others don't see it?
I think it's partly that. I think other people see him too, and I think that me starting young enough and being like cocky and dumb enough just to think that anything would work really worked in my advantage, because I do a lot of coaching and consulting with a lot of sellers who are, say, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're a lot more apprehensive about the world and kind of scared of, like, what if I do this? What's going to happen? What if I do this? What's going to happen? Like, well, how should I handle my sales tax? Do I need to have insurance for liability? And these are all the things when I started selling on Amazon when I was 16, 17, 18, had no idea about and didn't worry about and just kept moving forward and kept building a business. And I think that's really, really helped me, is that I've been kind of fearless. And whenever I do see that there's a gap in the market, I'm fearless and cocky enough to think that I truly can do a better job and actually go out there and do it, opposed to just talking about it.
Do you think you could do the same thing in the retail world, in a brick and mortar way? Or, I mean, do you think that that skill is transferable? Do you think there's a chance that that will come back?
Oh, 100%. I think no problem. I can't help it. I've talked to other entrepreneurs, and they can't help it too, where you sit there and you go out to eat, and you're sitting there at the restaurant, and you're looking around, and you go, wow, I wonder why they have the computer all the way back there, but they're taking orders all the way over here. That's an inefficiency. They shouldn't be doing that. They're wasting footsteps. Or what does this company do this way? They're wasting money. They could easily be doing it this way. They'd save money and make their employees happier. Why wouldn't they want to do that? And so I can't help but just kind of think in the business owner mindset at all times. And so it should help me no matter what career I get into later on in life.
Here's, because you're talking about touch points, and I love the conversation of touch points. Every time somebody touches a product, there's a cost, right? There's something, A, could go wrong. B, there's just flat out a cost. So have you been able to take and going now that you're restarting a business, right, and different, are you able to just, I guess logically, you're able to take it from the peak optimum point that you and your brother had his business at, your business, yours and his, and you're able to start at that point. Do you see it accelerating now that you've seen it for a little bit of time?
Yes, I do see it accelerating. And two, it's like I was saying earlier, I travel a lot and go on like a lot of different vacations. And so that's always a really good test too of all my systems and processes to make sure everything does run without me being there. And so that's like another great learning point of like kind of making sure that my business is sustainable and can run without me being there, is that I constantly give it the opportunity to.
Wait, give an example of something that wasn't working right and then how you dealt with it, right? So you must have went somewhere and said, oh, shoot, this was supposed to happen and it didn't.
Well, my bank wouldn't allow me to do wire transfers unless I was inside the branch. And so this is something that I was told them that they thought this was ridiculous, and I was willing to change banks over it because I travel so much, and if I can't pay my suppliers, and then everything gets delayed down the chute. And so I was complaining about it to my father, and he was saying, oh, we got a little thumb drive that scans our fingerprints and allows us to do wire transfers from anywhere in the world. And so I went back into my bank, complained about it, told them that I heard that this is something that's possible. And they said, oh, yeah, we do have that. And so now I have that thumb drive so I can make payments no matter where I am in the world.
But it took you know, there's the gap, right? There's your mind immediately saying, why isn't my banker saying, hey, I want to retain this guy as a customer. I see a future here. I should be going to this guy saying, hey, this might be something you could use, right? That's your mind. I know it.
Yep.
I could
tell.
Well,
you know, 100%. And I'm sitting there telling them about the value of Bitcoin and complaining to them about how archaic it is that I have to fill out a sheet of paper to do wire transfers, like they're actually going to file it.
So those are all big strengths, and you clearly have done very well with them. What's your biggest weakness? Where do you struggle?
Details.
Okay.
Reading directions. Reading and writing in general. I've never been good at reading or writing. I can't. For me to write a paragraph would take me an hour. type of thing. And so those have just never been my strength points throughout school. I was a very bad student throughout school. I never really could study or anything like that because I'm not very detail-oriented and I can't read or write. And so those things are definitely my weaknesses.
But your mind was racing as an entrepreneur back as a high school student even, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had all sorts of goofy little businesses in high school.
I think of when I listen to Gary Vee, I mean, a very similar thing. His mind couldn't be controlled in that formal controlling classroom setting. You know, there might be a reason that you weren't successful in that environment because your mind is not built that way.
No, yeah. I think it's just how, like, I don't know how immature my brain was, but if they could have showed me how each lesson plan could apply directly to me making money in my pocket, I probably would have listened a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that within the next 10 years, those conversations are going to be happening because you're going to see more and more people, you know, as businesses shrink and you know, as the generic work can get, you know, moved anywhere, right? You know, I used to use this example around where I live now. The banks still count their own money. Community we used to live in, there was this warehouse that nobody knew what it was in it. That's all they do is count money for all the banks for that region. And so they used to have all their own cash rooms. They're all gone because there's no value in counting. It's either right or it's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the equipment could be used for anything. They could be saying, oh, okay, now it's ABC Bank. Oh, now it's XYZ Bank. It doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this technology wave we're going through, this second industrial revolution, is going to accelerate those conversations because I listen to my own kids talking about it more and more like, hey, I'm doing this on the side. I'm interested in doing something on the side. That didn't happen in my generation.
No, I think the whole startup culture and all these billion-dollar startups has really made starting your own business kind of like a cool thing again. And I think that a lot more and more people are getting interested in starting their own businesses and not living life by the typical script.
Yeah, you only get 2 weeks vacation this year, Will. That's it. And you got to be in. Oh, you're not here by 8? One demerit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You didn't go through that life, did you?
No, I couldn't.
Do you think you're employable?
No. I would be a crazy person to try to hire, because I would be – there'd just be certain things that I just wouldn't be able to budge on kind of things, because it's just I know that this is the right way to do it type of thing. And the last thing I ever want to hear is, like, when I ask, like, why do you do things this way, the answer of, well, because we've always done it this way.
Mm.
That kind of stuff, that would just drive me nuts.
You would go over the edge. Okay, so you've got a lot going on. You clearly are, and you're building a lifestyle business, but you really – I interviewed Brandon Dubsky, and he said the same thing, is that he had a big company. He had, as he said, narrow forklifts to fit down the aisles. I had all that stuff. He said, I'll never do it again. He said, I want a business that I can work 1 hour a week on. That's my life. That's the way I want it. And so he gives 1 hour of his time. It's very concentrated. You're in a similar path. What are some of the tools that you're using that are allowing you to have that freedom that you just couldn't do without?
This is going to sound boring, but my calendar app, I use Sunrise, is like everything to me, because not only of me scheduling calls, like my consulting calls and stuff like this podcast, but also keeping track of all the time zones is something, since I'm always traveling, it's something that's just so necessary for me to kind of keep in track, and something I can always know that I can look at each morning and kind of know this is my day for the day and know that it's always right and know that I can always trust it.
So it's sacred. That's the thing you follow. Do you script out your days in advance then too? I mean, other than, you know, the business stuff, but I mean, hey, get up at this time, have breakfast by this time, work out by this time. Are you that organized?
No, I'm an early riser regardless. I wake up between like 5:30 and 6 every morning with no alarm, kind of just normally. And so I don't need to do all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty self-motivated. The thing I usually do, though, is like I'll wake up in the morning and I'll see my phone's all the notifications, and I'll kind of take a look through them real quick, look through my emails real quick, and kind of make like a quick like 5 things I need to do for the day. And usually like the 5 things I usually can get done in 15, 20 minutes, just quick little things, but I just need to make sure that I write them down or else I'm just going to sit there until I finish them, have kind of anxiety and have them just kind of like roll through my head over and over again. So I usually just write them down as fast as possible. So that way I know I'm not going to forget them. And at the same time, it'll kind of like the anxiety leaves my head.
Because that's checked off the most. And if those 5 made the list, they are the most important things in your mind. By checking them off, you're making a mental check off, right? And it just, boom, it
it really does release something, I think. And I think that's a great advice. I think that's a great example and a great I call them golden nuggets. I think that's a great example. What other tools are you using that you just can't do without?
Besides that, really nothing.
Okay.
I use Feedback Genius to make sure I get like feedback from the people I sell my products to. I use Stitch Labs and Xero in conjunction to do inventory management and accounting. But besides that, those are like pretty much the only softwares I use. I'm not a super high-tech person. I'm not very familiar with a bunch of stuff, so I don't use that many different softwares or programs.
But the simplicity of what you're using sounds like, you know, again, if you're going to build a lifestyle that you're looking for, you're taking 4-hour work week and saying even that's too long, right? You want to be less than that. And so you're really, really making it simple. I think that's part of the beauty of it, by keeping it simple, right? Not complicated. I think that's smart.
Yeah, I noticed that's one of the biggest mistakes I see, like, Amazon sellers get into right off the bat, is they buy a course, they get all pumped up, and then they buy, before they even source the product or done anything, they sign up for 10 different softwares, because each one of them feels like that's going to be the one that takes me to the next level. That's going to be the little hack that I have that no one else has. That's going to be the thing that makes sure that my business scales, and it's going to be my little secret weapon. And that's kind of the mentality that they all have, where it's, you really need to have the mentality of more, don't use software until you need it, opposed to getting software and then trying to build your business around them.
So what would you say is the thing that's going to take them to the next level? You're saying, hey, all that other stuff is really fancy and all that kind of jazz. What is it?
Action. Actually sourcing products, not just sitting there in analysis paralysis, looking at different metrics all day, every day. Order some samples from AliExpress, get the ball rolling, get the business going, test new products, spend money on products and inventory. Don't spend products on software.
Or coaches.
That's the thing, is that I'm conflicted about that, because it's I know.
Well, you coach.
Well, not only that, but it's that I know people who spend $200,000 over 4 years to get a degree to become a kindergarten teacher, and the amount of time it's going to take for you to pay back that degree may be a couple decades. Where if someone spends $5,000 on a program or coaching, there's a decent possibility that they pay back that money in the first few months.
I think there's more than a decent possibility. There's a much better opportunity, because you're saying that when you get that kindergarten degree, you're assuming they can get a job.
Well, 100%. Exactly. So that's the kind of thing where it's like the coaching and the courses all have their kind of place if you just need like the kind of like a boot camp and you need to get started super quickly. Because, yeah, like you said, a kindergarten teacher might not have a job. And the other way around, if you really work your tail off and you really do a good job of sourcing products and doing your due diligence and everything, you should have a somewhat sustainable business. I'm not saying you're going to be making $20,000 a month, but to make an extra $1,000 to $2,000 a month in pocket change on Amazon is pretty damn easy.
As a percentage of your investment, $1,000 to $2,000 a month is a great return, right? Because you, as your description was a $5,000 course, you make back that in 5 months, as opposed to that other degree where you talked about in a kindergarten teacher where it takes them 15 – well, I guess they pay payments for 20 years now, student loans.
Yeah, if not longer.
So, yeah, you know, I think the key to coaching and the key to courses, they are time savers. The hardest thing I think – when, especially, I talk to so many successful sellers, the one thing they don't have enough is time. They all have money. They've created money. They have a flow of money. It's time, right? And so you could take a course, the right course, and it shaves off the entry point to that new market, or it takes away the challenges. So you learn from your mistakes, right? You've already made these mistakes. You're going to help teach me so I don't have to make them again. Boom, I can advance that much quicker. Kind of similar to where you're at now, where you're able to start this business and almost immediately have immediate success, because all that learning curve is gone. You've already taken that away. And I think that's what courses are. And I think that's the place you got to put them in your mind. When you're ready, when you've mastered this segment, this section, and you're ready to go to the next thing, use a course, use a coach for that next one, so you can ramp up very quickly for the next one. But not all of them at the same time, because, like you said, you'll run in circles, paralysis.
Yep, 100%. All the information is out there. You're just paying these courses and coaches to basically aggregate the information for you.
Yeah, and get you to the real key learnings and filter out the other, you know, think about a textbook. How much of it really is necessary?
Yep, 100%.
Right? You know, maybe 10%, right? And so that they can get it down there in a concise fashion. Here's what you need to worry about, Will, not the rest of this stuff.
Yep.
Okay, so give me some podcasts, books, or anything else that you think our listeners could use to benefit, to help them get to your level.
Well, 4-hour work week, as you mentioned earlier, pretty much changed my life. I read that in college and decided I was never going to get a job. So that's a really good book. I really like Lean Startup and applying those techniques to selling on Amazon. I order a lot of samples from AliExpress and kind of do the Lean Startup technique with those. I also like, I'm trying to think of some podcasts. I listen to the Tropical MBA a lot. I like the Empire Flippers podcast is a good podcast. I like This Week in Startups and all the startup podcasts. I like basically any books or podcasts that are about business that don't pertain to Amazon. And then I like using those kind of business tactics that they use and applying them to Amazon, because usually the majority of people who sell on Amazon, it's a big game of follow the leader where one person comes out with a new technique and then everyone follows them. And I like kind of going on my own path, because when everyone's over selling the different silicone kitchen accessories and pet accessories and workout stuff, I'll be selling in these obscure niches where no one bugs me.
Again, I'm going to mention Brandon Dubsky. He had a very successful eBay business, went over to Amazon, did really well. He said when he really hit it big was he went to an Inc. 500 conference where nobody talked about Amazon. It wasn't even in the discussion. And he met mega sellers with their own websites and that. Now he does well over $1 million in sales, and 80% of it is on his own private website because he expanded his pond. He got out of the small circles that we're traveling in with, you know, with this Facebook communities, and he was able to see, hey, there are other ways to do things. And very similar to what you're saying is not learning here only.
Yeah,
go out, learn others, and bring it here.
Yeah, I had sold millions on Amazon before I realized people were talking about selling on Amazon online, and before I realized that there was Facebook communities and all this kind of stuff. And so when I first started reading all those Facebook communities, it was just so jaw-dropping to me that people were giving away samples for reviews and all these different techniques that I'd never even thought of.
That's funny. And yet you were still successful. And as you said, you sold millions without that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now that stuff is kind of stopping, right, because they're not allowing it anymore. And so that model, while it was quick and didn't last long. Okay, so we're approaching the end. What I like to do is to try to help people move their business forward, right? So I'm asking you for one tip or trick. In addition, you gave us a ton of them, and I'll aggregate what I can. But give us something that somebody can take and put into their business tomorrow to help them move forward.
So something to help them move forward, it's I'll give a couple tips. One's for someone who hasn't started their business yet is just get moving. Order your first sample on AliExpress. You click one button, it's already on its way to your house, and you could test out a product within 2 weeks. And for people who are a little bit more experienced, I would just suggest to really look at your bottom line and really see where every single dollar you're spending goes, and make sure you're not wasting money on vanity software that you're not using, or make sure that you're not wasting money on employees or people who aren't really adding value to your business.
Love it. I love the vanity software. That's such a great phrase. I mean, it really is when you think about it. You know, I feel good. I got that software. Okay.
Well,
how's it make you money?
Yeah. Well, I talked to that Amazon seller who was saying, well, I don't know what to do. I'm spending 40 hours a week. And it's like, well, what are you doing those 40 hours a week? She's like, well, I'm checking this software, and then I'm checking these analytics, and I'm checking my inventory, and I'm checking the repricer, and then I'm checking this software. And it's like, sounds like you're just checking a bunch of stuff, but you're not actually getting any work done.
I love it. All right, Will, best way to get in touch with you?
Follow me on Twitter, WTJERN, or you can just email me. It's my name spelled out, William, WILLIAMTJERNLUND, at gmail.com. So, yeah, email me if you have any questions, or follow me on Twitter.
And I'll put the links right there. And I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but continued success. That was tough to get out. I'm telling you, it's that Churnland. I'm getting stuck on it. Well, I was just looking at your name, and I'm like, oh. I just wish you nothing but the continued success. I can't wait to meet you face-to-face, one of these meetings, meetups, conferences, or something. Just inspiring to see such a young man have it figured out. Great night. Take care. Thanks again.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, I hope you're inspired. I'm inspired. He's 25 years old. Remember, this is the first of three. I call it the triple threat. Thanks, Greg Purdy, for that name. I love it. All have been involved in a $5 million+ business. One of the three are probably going to hit $10 million. The next episode will drop shortly. It's amazing. Blown away again with the amount of information that they are willing to share. And if you take it serious, you too can reach much higher levels. So drop by ecommercemomentum.com. I have lots more links. I have lots of information out there. I really appreciate you listening to the podcast. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.